Thanks, guys, for getting together. This is Nesgarn Vanna in Regina, Saskatchewan. And on the line here, I've got Team Boss, which consists of Benny Kid, Olmaz, Sass Travelbugs, and Scratch One. As many geocachers recall, the world's previously oldest unfound geocache was GCDBF 4.5-pound walleye, placed in 2001, found 12 years later in June 2013. And that was pretty widely announced. So the title for Canada's oldest cache then passed to GC989E Sask Extreme 01, which is a virtual cache in northern Saskatchewan, over 500 kilometers north of Saskatoon, the largest city in the province. It was placed way back in 2002, and on the Mega Living Skies 2014 Mega Event page, we featured that back in March. And yeah, these guys have logged it as a first to find last week. So we've got them all together and just thought we'd get their opinions. So thanks for coming, everybody. Maybe just start off if you want to give a little introduction about yourselves.
Okay, I'm going to start. Our geocaching handle is Benny Kid, the B out of the boss. And like many others, we named our geocaching handle after our dog Benny. We started caching back with Scratch One back on August 12th of 2006. And I think Scratch One will elaborate a little bit on the finds of our start. But to date, we have found a little over 10,600 caches. I'm the junior cacher of this group. Mega numbers ahead of where I'm at, but we're still lots to learn about geocaching. So I'm just going to let one of the others take over.
All right, Olmaz.
Yeah, okay. I'm known as Olmaz from Regina, Saskatchewan, and I started geocaching probably back in December of 2006. It's an event I sort of love, and probably what I like most of all is doing rural caches and getting out in the country and just driving around and seeing countryside. And this cache really done it. This group I went with from Saskatoon, we've been kind of caching friends now for the last few years and so forth. And no matter where we've gone and met up and so forth, we always just really enjoyed our company. So I was just a real, really thrilled when they asked me to tag along to help me get this cache.
Awesome. SAS Travel Bugs.
Hey, this is Dave and Jen from SAS Travel Bugs. We started caching in somewhere around 2010. It's kind of an interesting story on how we got involved. We had a police friend who was called out to one of the ammo cans on the east side of town because the guy was concerned maybe it was some kind of bomb or something. I don't know. And when my police friend opened it up, he was introduced right then to geocaching, and he said to the citizen, he said, "Okay, well, this isn't a, this is okay. This is a part of a game or something like that. Just put it back in the bush." And then he came right away to tell me. And after that, we bought a GPS right away, and we were completely hooked. So geocaching for us has taken us pretty much all over the world. We love to travel and cache. I mean, that's what we do. And right now, our numbers are at about 17,000.
Awesome. Yeah, and we look forward to seeing your seminar at the Living Skies Mega Event in July. Thanks, Scratch One.
Yes, Scratch One, MNL. We started the same time as Benny Kidd, August 12th, 2006. And as well, we also, our handle is named after our cat. And we couldn't get the actual handle of Scratch. We had to add the one behind it because somebody in Alberta already had that handle. Anyway, we've really enjoyed caching. We were a little bit of a late bloomer in terms of getting started. Our first year, we only found 10 caches. Our second year, we found 368 caches. And then in 2008, Benny Kidd and ourselves took a trip south into Phoenix, and things sort of blossomed from there. We're presently at just over 23,000 caches. And the one thing that we really enjoy about caching are the friends and the places that we've been to since we've started. Ryan, I'll just continue on with what gave us the idea to go after this cache that was unfound for 12 years. Well, in January in Phoenix, Arizona, SAS Travel Bugs came down for a visit. And they were telling us of an interview that they heard with Ken Jamin regarding his cache, SAS Extreme 01. That really brought the light to what we really decided that we wanted to do and wanted to pursue it. Now, we knew that it was going to take some time before this was actually going to happen. So back and forth with emails, the following months and trying to decide when and the best time to go and get this one. So I'll just pass it back over to Dave from SAS Travel Bugs, and he'll be able to give us a little bit more info.
Okay, so
thanks, Mike.
So then Mike said to me, he said, he would handle the truck aspect of it and getting us up there all safe. But he wanted me to kind of check a little bit on the maps and find out exactly where this was. And so I went about looking at a bunch of different maps and different topo maps and seeing exactly where the cache was and the best way in and the best place to drop a boat and where to actually get a boat. I was able to locate a little, well, a bit like a fishing village, small little hamlet, just it's kind of northwest of the cache. And from there, I set about trying to locate someone there that would be able to, be able to rent us a boat or tell us when the ice was off. And I did get a hold of a really nice lady who was really instrumental with Can-Am Outfitters at Brabant Lake. We'll give a bit of a feed there. And she was awesome. She let us know right when the ice was going to be off. Initially, I was so excited. I had said to Mike, I said, "Why don't we the ice is still on and there was an ice road. Why don't we walk across it? You know, like, cause it's, there was a little just west. It was about 300 meters or so. We could walk from there, you know, if the ice was good." And Mike was, he was the smart one. He had said, we're not going to do that because maybe there's a part in the ice that you wouldn't notice. You'd walk in and boom, we're in. So it was really hard to wait as the ice was melting because we were ready to go probably early into May.
Yes.
So you guys have been working on this for over a month.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, since January off and on, I mean, initially we had an idea that we were going to bring a float plane, rent a float plane to get in there. I mean,
whatever it takes.
We thought about a helicopter. I mean, we didn't know what we were in for until we saw the maps and started investigating. Yeah. And then eventually when I got the email from the lady up north that said the ice is off, well, I was in Vegas. So we were crossing fingers that someone wouldn't snag it on us because I really thought someone would get this before the Mega, just because the Mega's here, you know, and we really wanted it. So.
So on the day you guys headed up there, I mean, at over 500 kilometers north of Saskatoon, what is that? I mean, is that like 5 or 6 hours of driving to get up there? What time did you guys leave in the morning?
Well, actually, we left the night before. We left at approximately 9:45 p.m. from Saskatoon with the intentions of just driving as far as LaRonge. We weren't sure if we were going to get gas at LaRonge to continue on. But when we left Saskatoon, it was pouring rain, as it had been pouring for 2 or 3 days prior to the trip. But we had been looking at the weather forecast up in the north, and it didn't seem to be as severe as it was actually right in and around Saskatoon. So we started our drive at 9:45 and in the rain. And as we went north, Old Mass had done a pocket query for caches along the road that we could get because we knew we were going to have lots of time to get up there.
The next time you're going to be up there again?
Yeah, so we had sort of told Can-Am Outfitters that we would be up there about 9 o'clock. So we were gauging our time that way, and we found that once we got to LaRonge, we had lots of time. And so instead of staying in LaRonge, we continued on the road north. The road eventually turns to gravel. And I had been on that road back in 2007 on a fishing trip up to Lawrence Bay Lodge. And the road could be treacherous at times. And on that particular trip, we ended up with two flat tires. So obviously, when you only have one spare, two flats is not very productive for your drive. So
you were gritting your teeth the whole time.
Yeah. So we knew that we were going to slow our speed down once we got on the gravel, but the trip couldn't have worked out any better. As we got towards LaRange, the rain stopped. You know, our caching along the way was fantastic. We saw some really great spots. And once we got onto the grid road, it was not the same as it was back in 2007. It was well graded. You know, 3:30, 4 o'clock in the morning, we're out looking for caches and not needing a flashlight. That's how the light was for us at that time. So,
because it's so far north.
That's correct. So we made it to Brabant. That was our destination. And we were there at 5:30 in the morning. But as it turned out, because we had told them that we wouldn't be needing the boat till 9, we did have a little bit of a wait before we were able to get the boat. But they had the boat for us. It was an excellent, the 16-foot Lund with a 25-horse outboard motor on it. And we were on our way across the lake to the cache.
So you got the boat, and I guess gleefully heading towards the island. Once you landed, how hard was the survey marker to find, and what did it feel like when you made the find?
Well, I'll tell you what. I was driving the boat and the last one to get out, but I will pass it over to SAS Travel Bugs, and he'll explain that.
Okay, nice. So we had John in the, or Omaz in the front, and he was watching for rocks as we came through that channel, because there was about two or three little islands, and we were really, I mean, Mike's main thing was we didn't want to be bouncing that propeller off any kind of rock, and it was really dark, so we would assume that it was deep enough that we could kind of navigate through the channel, I guess, from the east side of that. As we started to get closer, it was like Mike knew exactly, like he had a GPS in his head, because he knew he was heading straight for that cache. I kept kind of you know, putting my GPS back to him, like in his face, to show him kind of where we were at. And he by the end, he said, you know, I could never see it, which was funny because he was going straight for it. But as we got closer, there were two islands that we were looking at. And when we got closer, we all had all our GPSs and agreed it was the west one or the right one. And so we went around the backside or the south side of it, and we parked in a little inlet. It was almost as if it was made for a little boat. We pulled right up, we turned off the engine, and we kind of glided in. And when we landed into the shore, I think we looked at our GPSs and we were about 30 meters from the cache, like under 100 feet.
Oh, nice.
So Omaz jumped out and kind of tied up the boat. And then Ross and I were like little kids. We raced
Ran
over.
Ran away to, while he's busy.
Exactly. We raced over to the cache, and when we got really close, we could see the cairn. Probably at about 12 meters, we saw the cairn, and Ross said, there's the rocks. That's the rock pile. He kind of raced ahead, and at that point...
Right, that was the kind of teaser photo that the owner had listed as a reference.
Mm-hmm. Well, it was we weren't sure what we were going to see. I mean, that was another thing, because we were like, well, it's been 12 years. So what kind of rocks would be there? Like, how do we know?
Might have been blown over by gusts, or
yeah, and it wasn't. It was as if Ken Jammin literally made that rock pile yesterday. Like, it looked perfect, and then Ross, he got so excited that he raced toward it, and at that point he actually fell in a hole, and he twisted his knee at that point, and I caught him, and yeah, so he's still feeling the effects of it, and I keep telling him that. It was a
I was going to say, he probably didn't feel a thing, because that's not what he was thinking about at all.
No, not really. No. So anyways, to answer the question, the survey mark was super easy to find. It was just, it was perfect. It was, you know, and how did we feel? Well, man, we were whooping and screaming and high-fiving like a bunch of kids. I mean, it was.
I love the photo you posted on the cache page of you kissing the survey marker.
Yeah. Well, that was all
four of us.
That was something I had said to Jen. I promised her. I said, when I see that cache, I'm going to kiss it. She thought, oh, that's like dirty. I said, too bad. This is one. Yeah, I said, this is one we want. I don't care. I'm going to be kissing that cache. And then it turned to everyone did it. So that was kind of cool.
So I guess being so far north, that's got to be out of any kind of cell phone coverage or anything. The rest of the local caching communities found out because of a phone call.
And
I guess Olmaz had made after the find.
Yeah, and John will speak to that, Ryan.
Yeah. Well, when we got back on the main shore, and we stopped and had a, I guess you call it, a late breakfast there, and they did have internet, but we had trouble trying to connect up with it. So we thought, well, I guess that's out of the question. And there's no cell service up there. And we finally, I guess, probably drove just a little over an hour south of Brabrand before we got any cell service. And that was over at Otter Rapids there, where we had to cross the Churchill River. But I kind of enjoyed that because last fall, Ken Jama and I were caching up in the Medicine Hat area. And we talked about this cache, you know, at great lengths, so not being found and all that. Who's going to go up there? Who's going to get it and stuff like that? So I knew that if I was there to find that cache, I'm going to phone him. And I just wish I could have done it from ground zero. But we had to wait till we got down to the, you know, to the Churchill River there in Otter Rapids. I give him a call. And typically when he answers the phone, you know, he's got this thing that tells you who's calling. And all he says, hey, old Maz, what are you up to? All I said to him was the number of the benchmark and then which number was double stamped. And he seemed to be
silence on the other end.
Yeah, he seemed to be a little stunned and, you know, just wasn't sure what it was. And then the rest of the boys, they started to go whooping it up inside the truck. And then he caught on. And I think he's probably just ecstatic as we were. But he was just, he couldn't believe it that we were up there and got the cash.
It is a landmark achievement. It's been a big source of attention lately in Saskatchewan. It's inspiring to everybody. It exemplifies the original vision of geocaching, in my opinion, like outdoor adventure, camaraderie, discover the beauty in our province, Saskatchewan, Canada, the rest of the world. The next ones won't be nearly as easy by the looks of it. I was looking at the next oldest unfound caches in Canada, one that's called not the North Pole, but you can see it from here. It's like 73 degrees north up on Baffin Island, and another one that's in the remote wilderness of Nunavut called Gold Lake, and there's people commenting on it that they aren't even sure if it's even there. Thank you, everybody. Is there any other closing notes that any of you want to add?
I would just like to say that I really enjoyed the camaraderie between the four of us, and we had just a great 24 hours, and I'd do it again in a heartbeat.
Probably the only thing I would like to say is I really enjoyed the us group going together and all that. Probably caching at night in the dark, that was really enjoyable. It felt safe. It's a trip that I would probably advise anybody go and take. It's well worth it.
And I guess anybody, if they want to come meet the quadrangle of finders of this cache, they can find you in the crowds at the Living Skies 2014 Mega Event, and especially SAS Travel Bugs. You're doing a seminar on some of your own adventures.
Yeah, we'll all be there. I would also like to say that it was a lot of fun going with these guys, and looking forward to the next adventure. How far did you say that one was in Nunavut?
Many thousands of kilometers.
Dave, I looked at that one today, and
oh no,
there is a little village not too far from there, but I think it might be easier to go in the wintertime because then we could ride in the skidoo to it instead of walk to it in the summer.
There you have it, folks. Stay tuned for the further adventures of Team Boss. All right, everybody. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks, Ryan.